ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, and we're here to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Tuesday, May 16th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
I was reading two things at the same time, so it was kind of hard to...
Makes you dyslexic when you do
a
that.
A little Melody. Bit, actually, would have been three things, so yeah.
But I mean, being a woman, you can do that... That multi-phasing or what multitasking. Yes. Should
well,
be able to
Al,
read one thing with one eye and read another thing with the other eye.
Well, you know, Al, I'm one of the few women in this world who believe that women should be at home raising their families and cooking dinner. And I'm another one that believes that I don't believe in multitasking. I don't think anyone can multitask. You can do simple.
We're going to have to call Guinness or maybe the Smithsonian because they need to have a display, you know.
Or me analyze, right?
Uh-huh.
I believe you can do simple tasks. You can multitask simple tasks, you know. But, you know, anything that's of, you know, meaning, no, you can't. You can't do it well. You can't do two things well. But anyway, I better move on before I, again, open mouth, insert that good old foot. Anyway, gold today. You have up $590 for gold. $590 for gold at $1,237.30. You know, the dangerous, most upsetting thing about what I just said just means I'm old. That's an old view of things. You know, the modern world, the youth, hey, man, we can do anything. We can multitask a thousand things.
See, they don't need to multitask. They have computers and they have artificial intelligence in their telephones and one thing, another like that. They don't need to. It's mature people who still concern themselves with multitasking. They think we have to do this biologically. And the kids know, nah, you can do it all. You can all do it on computers.
Well, the computer is giving us silver up 20 cents today at $16.90, almost 17. Woohoo! Platinum's up $12 today at $944, and palladium, a little pressure on that, down $2 at $795. So earlier today, yeah, the U.S. dollar got whacked pretty good today, down 0.75 at 98.14, and crude oil was also down 0.24 at 48.61, and the paper markets today, I believe, you know, again, record highs for at least the NASDAQ. You have the, the Dow down 2 points at 20,979. You have the NASDAQ up 20 at 61.69. And you have the S&P down 1.65 at 2,400.67. 10-year yield today, 2.33%. That's not doing anything. Euro should be up. It was up almost a full point, up 0.97 at 1.11. 111 for the euro. So the euro is enjoying some strength in their currency, and the U.S. dollar corporations are enjoying some weakness in the U.S. dollar. So we'll just have to see how low does she go, not without, without it actually collapsing. There were some reports out today. If I have here Bloomberg, Ford Motor Company, they're planning to trim about 10% of its global salaried workforce. Now, those are good jobs. When you're salaried, those are good jobs management. While retaining the tech talent, it's recruited to develop driverless and electric cars. The Chief Executive Officer, Mark Fields, they're looking to boost profit amidst the lagging stock price. The reductions are expected to target salaried employees mostly in North America and Asia. You know, what's interesting, too, about North America and the salaried employees, there's been new laws passed about overtime work. If you were a salaried employee, if you worked 90 hours, you had your salary. The same way if you worked 20, you still got your salary. But they changed the laws for that overtime. Now salaried employees get the overtime. So to me, what's the point of having salaried employees anymore? Because that was, you know, something people, you worked for. If you were in that position, you were a person who did work hard. And, you know, you at 5 o'clock, the bell rang, you didn't run home. You know, you worked until your job was done. I mean, you usually had a position of, you know, that required, you know, some dedication. And so, hey, let's limit those salary employees, slap them on an hourly wage. And, you know, anyway,
they'll all be replaced by robots soon enough.
Yeah, Melody. Soon enough. But the chief executive officer, Mark Fields, he's working to cut costs by about $3 billion this year. Ford's stock is down about 37% since he became the CEO in 2014. Ford is also pouring billions into electric, self-driving cars and ride-sharing as it struggles more than General Motors with a slowing U.S. market. But hey, everything is good here. Why would we have a slowing U.S. market if things are dandy? Both Fields and Executive Chairman Bill Ford have curried favor with the president this year, giving him advance notice of hiring and an investment in American plants and canceling a small car factory in Mexico. Trump has pointed to carmakers' plans and claimed they're restoring American manufacturing because of him. Ford temporarily laid off 130 workers at an Ohio plant, truck plant, earlier this month. Again, slower customer demand. Automakers have widespread shutdowns planned for the summer to adjust to the U.S. car market's recent slowdown. There have been 7 years of gains, but you know, if you have 7 years of gains, it's just you just don't stop buying cars. You have leases, and a lot of those purchases are leases, you know, to where you have to re-up every so many years. So, you know, you should still have that steady stream of auto buying, unless there's a problem. And of course,
I think the problem is that they've had low interest rates, and it created such a wonderful incentive for a lot of people to buy cars when they didn't really, when ordinarily they'd have kept their car, the car they had for a couple more years, and said, this is such a deal on these low interest rates that I'm going to buy now. And they've wound up, they've sold a bunch of cars in the recent past, and now their people don't need cars. And I think that's at least part of the problem. Another problem, people are broke.
Well, you do have low interest, you know, rates, but you also have, you had a lot of people that went into leases for the lower payments because they couldn't afford the higher finance payment. Hey, when you lease a car for 3 to 4 years, you got to keep that car in nice condition. I mean, you just have to hand those keys back, and, you know, if there's any dings or dents bigger than a certain size, like I think it's a credit card, you have to have it repaired, the paint, the interior. I mean, that car has to be in decent condition when you hand those keys back. So, you know, we could see problems there. Plus, we also have, we talked about all the time, subprime auto loans. So, again, this wasn't an industry that was truly built, you know, the past 7 years was truly built on a strong economy, you know, where everything else was flowing and people were out there and were able to buy new cars. They were, again, lured into the market by the low rates, by leasing. And, you know, it's now all of a sudden.
And the idea was that they would use quantitative easing or variations on that theme to stimulate the economy, get people to go out and buy things, and then that would cause more people to get jobs. In other words, the demand would increase, the manufacturers would say, let's hire another 50 or 100 people, and pretty soon the economy would be running just fine. But it never quite worked out that way. They may have been able to, you know, we've had some success. We avoided a crash. That was, got to give the government, the Federal Reserve credit for that. But still, we did not really restore the economy to strength. And as a result, here we sit right now, and we're wondering, what are we going to do? I'm not sure that there's enough credit left where people can borrow to buy things. And I'm not sure that they need that much right now, and they're certainly, they're concerned about whether they need anything. They're tightening their belts and not willing to spend to the same degree they have been in the past. And that means we're going to have unless something changes, we're going to see a recession or maybe even a depression. And there's some people, including myself, I'm not convinced that we ever got out of the last recession.
No, we haven't gotten out of the last three.
The whole thing has been an illusion.
We haven't gotten out of any recession since the 70s, or the early 80s, I should say, 80s, you know, the mid-80s.
They have maintained this economy as an illusion and hoping that they could kind of trick everybody into thinking it was strong and vibrant and
they could all prosper. They did trick them.
Well, they did for a while, but, you know, trickery is failing. And now what are they going to do? And we don't have the means. We've driven jobs, at least a percentage of jobs have been pushed overseas. We have a bunch of people who haven't been working at all for the last 5 or 10 years. And they don't really care to go back to work. Mm-mm. And even if they do, I mean, welfare, the unemployment has been, you know, it provided you get used to it, it's adequate. And
there was a U.S.
mistake after mistake, and how do we recover?
There was a U.S. manufacturing report released. So the production has recorded its biggest increase in more than 3 years in April, bolstering. And, you know, again, here's another report that just shows the opposite of what the car report just stated. U.S. manufacturing production, it's increased in more than 3 years in April, bolstering the view that the economic growth picked up early in the second quarter despite a surprise decline in home building. So now you have decline in home building. Manufacturing production jumped 1.0% last month, the biggest increase since February 2014. It actually fell in March. The surge, which outstripped economists' expectations, yeah. You know, it's like, well, gee, how did they get that number? We know it's not that. Oh, some more fidgeting in the budget numbers. But so again, everyone is always shocked. That's what just surprises, you know, it just kind of cracks me up because, oh, everyone is always so shocked at these numbers when you had the biggest increase. There were also some healthy increases in the output of machinery, fabricated metal products, appliances and furniture, buy all that furniture, business equipment and chemical products. Manufacturing only accounts for about 12% of the U.S. economy anymore. And so mining output increased 1.2% in April, contributing to the overall jump in industrial production. So mining is what really has, you know, added to this, you know, record increase in more than 3 years was the mining. In a separate report, the Commerce Department said housing starts dropped 2.6%. This is the lowest level in 5 months. Building permits fell 2.5% in April. So again, it's showing that the weaknesses are beginning to show in, you know, things that people purchase to keep this economy going. Homes, built automobiles, cars.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's
restaurants are in the worst situation they've had in a number of years. People just aren't going out to buy dinner, lunch, and whatever. They're under a great deal of stress. I don't know what to say about it, but I guess, you know, you wind up saying the same thing, but the fundamentals are available if you care to look at them in terms of the negatives that you can see. And the positives that are bandied about and presented to us are basically illusions. All of the little things we say, oh, things are going great, things, well, really? Really? Are they really going great, or are they an illusion? While those indicators that are detrimental, they appear to be real. And there seems to be a cause for these detrimental indicators, and not much cause for the apparent new records in the Dow Jones or Standard & Poor's or wherever. You know, you look at it and you say, on the one hand, we have reality that is telling us we're going to have a problem. We have illusion that tells us, no, everything's okay. What are you going to believe? I don't think the illusions are going to stand up, but we shall see.
And again, we're going to see the pressures, as I mentioned before, in the retail numbers. with people being laid off and so forth. There was an article written I saw earlier today. It was about Amazon and, you know, how that company, and I do believe in the elite, and I do believe that, you know, there is an agenda, and I do believe that, you know, they are promoting a one world government, religion, currency, and so forth. I get all that. I believe in Agenda 21. These are things, and, you know, when's the last, you don't hear very many people talk about Agenda 21 anymore. It was something that was, discussed.
I think it was promoted to a point where a number of people stood up and tried to resist it, and I think the people behind Agenda 21 have decided to pull in their horns and not talk about it, but still work to make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, these things are still in place, and I do believe that perhaps Amazon is part, because, I mean, 20 years ago, I mean, here you have this guy, he was promoted, you know, every day on CNBC. He has literally changed the way people shop. He has changed the way companies use computers by moving much of their information and systems to cloud services. He's even helped change the way we interact with computers by voice. He's changed. He bought the Washington Post. Look what's quoted most often now in Washington with all the, you know, the Trump stories and the reporting. It's the Washington Post. You know, he bought that and supposedly fixed it. So, you know, he has an aerospace company. You know, it's one thing to be successful, and he's worked hard, I suspect. But when you look at all his connections and how he got there, he had a lot of help. And I believe it was by the elite. And so I'm not quite sure how that all fits in. And I don't even know why, you know, even went off on including the, you know, the Amazon. It was almost like Amazon has replaced Walmart. You know, when Walmart was spreading and every little town in this country had to have a super Walmart. I mean, it was the government store. You had Hillary Clinton on the board of Walmart and so forth. And, you know, it was the government store. And now it's like Walmart has been replaced by Amazon. So I do believe that it's an elite organization. They can track everything. And I'll guarantee you, you know, whoever shops online, you probably go to Amazon.
Yeah, I guarantee you take a look at it.
Yeah.
You may find other sources, but one thing about it, you can't, what is it that you want to buy online that you can't find at Amazon? I mean, you
That's
may be able
point.
To get better deals at different places, but you go to Amazon and really they seem to have just about anything that you would be interested in buying online. It's one-stop shopping. It really is a supermarket. Has Amazon ever made a profit?
Not for a very long time.
Even
20 years ago, when you start and you're a corporation, I believe if you didn't make a profit in so long, you're not supposed to continue. I mean, but I don't know. So again, an elite club.
All right, we're going to another elite club, and that's the club composed of our commercials, and we'll be right back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. And we're just talking about Amazon and whether it's, you know, how strange is this that they have, so far as I know, they've never turned a profit. Now, what are they doing? Why let's go into business. We're going to start a business and we're going to keep at it, keep plugging away for years without making a profit. Why would we do that? And the answer is, because we think we've got something that's revolutionary. We've got something that we think is going to be huge. We have sufficiently deep pockets where we can keep running Amazon at a loss and in the process drive a bunch of competitors out of business. And they're certainly succeeding. I don't know if that's their intention, but that's what's happening. I saw a report that the number of thousands of retail stores are going to close down, that are projected to close down this year. It has to be, at least part of that is because of Amazon and internet shopping. So we're driving these companies out of business. What's going to happen when the only place you can buy is from Amazon? Now, that's never going to happen. There will always be more competition there. I don't believe Amazon will really be a monopoly, but still, they're pushing toward a point where they can set prices, and if there is no competition, they can set prices wherever they want them. Is that a good thing? I'm not even sure that it's a dangerous thing, because if they get out of line, you and I can open up a store of our own, Melody. There will be, and I'm speaking figuratively, but I mean, anybody got a computer? You can open a store.
China, Japan, they're increasing their holdings of U.S. Treasuries as overall net foreign purchases in March reached the strongest in the year. China increased its ownership of U.S. government bonds, notes, and bills by $27.9 billion to $1.9 trillion in March. That's a pretty big... Yeah.
You're talking $800 or $900 billion increase?
Yeah.
In 1 month?
Mm-hmm. That's remaining the second largest foreign holder of American debt, according to a monthly Treasury Department report released. Japan, the largest non-U.S. holder of government debt, increased its total to $1.12 trillion. That's only up $3.4 billion from a month earlier. Total foreign ownership of U.S. Treasuries amounted to about $6.08 trillion in March. This is the highest since September, but it's still down from its peak of $6.3 trillion a year earlier. Net purchases of U.S. Treasury bonds and notes by foreigners were $24 billion. Demand by overseas creditors for U.S. debt played a key role as the nation borrowed to revive its economy from the last recession. Interesting, particularly since our debt ceiling, we needed more money. Come on, guys, we need some more money. Come on, come on.
You know, it really is interesting because we hear these stories that there is conflict or potential conflict, military conflict even, between China and the United States, and yet China's buying more of our bombs. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure government needs to sell them someplace. And you're talking about this took place in March?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this has anything to do with Trump. I mean, is this China just working independently? He said, listen, let's get an extra $800 or $900 billion in U.S. bonds. Is that what they said? Or did Trump cut a deal and say, look, if you guys will take some of our bonds, give us some money to operate with so I can look like a hero, we will do this, that, or the other for you. Did Trump cut a deal, or is this just China acting independently?
I'm not sure. Was it March when the president of China was here? I believe it was. I believe it was March when he was here. And so, yeah, I definitely do believe there's deals that have been made. China's currency,
it's a heck of a deal, though.
The rise in their holdings come even as they're trying to stem their capital outflows of their currency through interventions in the currency markets. So, it's kind of
which is another interesting point. They're trying to stem the outflow of currency by private individuals. At the same time, they're increasing the outflow of Chinese currency to purchase U.S. bonds.
Yep.
Don't do as I do as I say. Mm-hmm. Apparently, that's a slogan that works in China as well as most other places in the world. We don't want you people to be giving your money to foreign or moving your money to foreign banks or.
Well, we do know Mr. Trump changed his view on China's and does not want to call them a currency manipulator.
Well, they're not.
Well, my point is all through his election, that's all he did was call them a currency manipulator. Mm-hmm. And he said that when he became president, that the first thing he would do is charge them as being a currency manipulator. And that has changed. And I do believe that's all part of the deals when you're talking about, you know, trying to get somebody to buy your debt and at the same time, you know, help with Korea, North Korea maybe. If you believe that he works, you know, if the president of North Korea actually is acting on his own, you know, not having somebody else tell him what to do. So,
I don't think anybody would dare try to tell Kim Jong-un what to do.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a good way to get yourself whacked.
Yeah, that's what we're all
if you
told.
Want to survive in North Korea...
Hey, the only thing, boss,
you're such a brilliant boy. You are just so smart, yes. You know.
The only thing in order to eliminate North Korea as a problem for the United States is to move our troops out of South Korea. That's all we have to do. You know.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, there's a situation going on in the Korean Peninsula. And I really have to ask, this has been going on since, what, 48 or something like that? When did we have the Korean War?
Mm-hmm.
It's been a half century.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think this should be resolved one way or the other? And South Korea seems to agree with that, where they are working perhaps independently to come to some kind of an agreement with North Korea, or at least try to improve relations. And I don't know whether Kim Jong-un will cooperate in that, but I think, you know, if he's really got an IQ over 90, maybe he will. But we've been there for a half century. I'm not sure what would be so bad. You know, it's like...
Get over it, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's like Germany being divided after World War II. Eventually, they had a wall between East Germany and West Germany. Germany was divided. Eventually, they took the wall down. And Germany became the most powerful economy in Europe. And I think it's partly because they recombined the East and Western Germany. I don't know. Is that why we're maintaining this wall between North Korea and South Korea? Is it intended to prevent them from becoming a stronger economy? Or what is our motivation here?
Well, well,
you don't know, do you, Melody?
Were you asking me a question?
No. I was asking Todd, the producer. Oh, yeah. I thought maybe he'd jump in, but I'm kind of equal opportunity in that regard. Mm-hmm. I pose these little questions, and anybody wants to jump in, hey, you know, I'm willing to do that. Here's an article from the Tanzanian Royalty Exploration Corporation. They are involved in gold mining and whatever. And there's an article here that talks about paper gold's weakness. And it's just a couple paragraphs, but it makes and it's a small excerpt out of a larger article that was presented, again, Tanzanian Royalty Exploration Corporation. But it says, due to its criminal hyper-manipulation, gold's price has become a paradox. And the paradox is this. Paper gold's weakness actually reflects the forthcoming strength of the physical gold market. The author says, I feel this statement, as paradoxical as it seems, hits the nail on the head. And what they're saying, what they're reminding us, is that the price of gold that we see in the markets right now is not the price of physical gold. It's the price of paper gold. And it cannot be a surprise if the price of paper gold is going down. That's what it's designed to do. It's designed to artificially suppress the price of gold. Then they use paper invoices rather than actual physical gold when they transact business on comics, for example, and in the paper gold market. But his point is that the paper gold's weakness is actually evidence of people maybe changing their mind and saying, I don't want paper gold anymore. I think I want real gold. I know it sounds like a crazy idea, but maybe instead of taking these pieces of paper, maybe we ought to take little gold coins or gold ingots or gold something, something tangible, something real. And I think he's making a good point here. It's just helpful to remember that the way the market is structured right now, it's the price you see of gold is the price of paper gold. Not the price of physical gold. We've allowed the physical market to be suppressed, essentially, and supplanted by the paper gold market. But you got to bear in mind that paper gold is not the real deal. There are reports that there are something like 600 paper ounces of gold on COMEX for every 1 ounce of physical gold that they've got in the vault. Now, I don't even know what I understand what that means. I mean, I understand the words. If there's 600 ounces of paper gold for 1 ounce, and all of those 600 ounces are 600 individuals or five individuals who are each claiming 125 ounces of gold or whatever, but they are all focused on a single ounce of gold. All of these 600 ounces of paper gold represent a desire by 600 different people, in theory, to buy 1 ounce of gold. They only have 1 ounce of gold, and they got 600 buyers. Imagine if I were selling a home to 600 potential buyers. If I was selling a car to 600 potential buyers. Only one car, but 600 people are offering to buy it. And I'm encouraging that and promising, oh, yeah, you send me some money. And, you know, if you ever want the gold, if you ever want the car, if you ever want the house, just say so, and, you know, we'll provide it. They can't. Again, we are dealing with a comparison, a contradiction between reality, fundamentals, tangible reality on the one hand, and illusions, financial illusions on the other. And you can't look at these things without being to some degree confused and bewildered and say, what the heck is going on here? But still, if you keep looking at it, you have to say, you know, this can't go on forever. We're going back to a physical reality. And I don't know when, but it has to happen because the illusions can't be sustained. Just can't be sustained. And therefore, we're going to go back to that tangible reality. And the gold and the idea that we are the reminder that the price of gold we see in the markets right now, paper gold, paper silver, neither one of these, none of these markets for gold and silver, with the possible, no, not even Shanghai. those market prices are really still set primarily by paper gold. And sooner or later, that's going to have to change. And when it does, people who have physical gold will be happy, and people who don't will be blue. Melody?
Well, I think one of the biggest problems that also affects the price of gold is truly the market has been weakened and watered down. There's been new investments, pitching, new presentations for gold. I mean, you have money that used to come into the physical markets go into ETFs. You have stockbrokers. Mm-hmm. My view has always been the reason they created ETFs was to manipulate the markets. You can manipulate the markets by having money go there instead of someplace else. That's why a lot of your mining shares are not going to do what they've done in the past up to a certain point. I believe once we get into the gist of a situation that we believe is coming and is probably, you know, going to happen sooner than later, yeah, then I believe things will return as is. People don't want the paper. They don't want the ETFs. They want the real thing. And I think you'll see the money go back into the mining shares, and you're going to see, you know, bigger, and that's how we're going to get $100 and $200 increases in gold in a day. So it eventually will come back, but people are kind of just like, they don't know, people don't know what to do with their money.
Insofar as they have any.
Well, what they have, their investments that they have, the savings that they have, from what I talk to about my clients, is they don't know what to do. You know, at one point in time when we were younger, it was just like, who'd think we'd have a problem, you know, knowing what to do with their money? You'd stick it in a bank and get interest. You know, that's all you had to do. You'd be able to live on, you know, $250,000 or $100,000. You wouldn't need $1 million+ to retire. So we're certainly in a different place. And you have a lot of these programs that have popped up. You have a lot of opinions that distort the real purposes of owning gold and silver and the importance of it. They promote the paper through the fundamentals of physical gold and silver. But then when they say something you like, you call them, and the next thing you know, it's like, oh no, you only want, you know, maybe 5 or 10% of your assets in physical, and we'll slam you in paper for the rest, and you'll just be as protected. No, you won't. So I think a lot of this has, and again, the internet is great for research. You know, most people don't do it. I'm sorry. Most people don't do their research. You know, people will listen to their financial planner, you know, to get their investment advice.
Well, part of the problem that we have, I think, is that there is a low return on investment for a lot of investments that are common. I mean, stocks, the vast majority of them, aren't really doing that well. There's a handful of stocks that are doing great. The vast majority aren't. There was a time when you could fish and look for an investment, look for return on investment. Now you can't get much.
It's not returns. You shouldn't buy gold and silver just because it's going up.
Well, I get that, but I mean, it confuses things when people can't calculate that return in a meaningful way. We'll take a break for a couple commercials. We'll be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, there's a big headline that came in where North Korea's cyber sleeper cells are prepping for war contingency. And this is, I believe, from the Telegraph out of South Korea. And the article talks about how since the 80s, North Korea has been known to train cadres of digital soldiers to engage in electronic warfare and profiteering exploits against its perceived enemies, most notably the South Korea and the United States. In recent years, cybersecurity experts say the North Koreans have spread these agents across the border into China and other Asian countries to help cloak their identities. The strategy also amounts to war contingency planning in case the homeland is attacked. Now, this force of North Korea sleeper cells is under new scrutiny in connection to the weekend, the ransomware assaults that have roiled much of the world over the past 4 days. So it looks like North Korea is going to be the ones that get the blame of the hacking that was done.
They've assumed the role previously held by Colonel Gaddafi?
Yeah. Maybe.
Used to blame him for everything. Now we're going to blame the North Koreans.
Signs have emerged that suggest North Koreans not only carried out the attacks, but that the targeted victims included China, North Korea's benefactor and enabler. Now, if North Korea is, China has cut off their coal exports and some other things China has done. So maybe he is a little, ticked off at China, but... While there's still nothing definitive to link the attacks to North Korea, similarities exist between the ransomware used to extort computer users into paying the hackers and previously deploy North Korean malware codes. So,
speaking of the WannaCry extortion ransomware that struck over the weekend, there are people who believe that a second round of that is coming, maybe right now. I received a warning from one of the services that I subscribe to while we were doing this program that I need to make sure all my virus protection databases are updated and patches are updated from Microsoft, and they are. But just the same, there appears to be a problem right now. There's an article here. Microsoft blasts NSA CIA for stockpiling vulnerabilities.
Yeah, we talked about earlier this week, or last week, I believe. Go ahead.
Yeah, but here's my point. This is what's happened here is the CIA NSA, they studied Microsoft operating systems, they studied fundamental systems here and around the world, and they devised different programs that you could go after computers, and you could make them crash. But then they failed to protect these new programs that could be exploited by these ransomware people, and they failed to protect them and keep them away out of the hands of the public, and fell in the hands of the public. And within a couple of weeks, we have these ransomware programs. I've seen reports that 3,000-4,000 computers are being infected every hour by ransomware programs globally. And Microsoft has posted a blog, and they are complaining for stockpiling vulnerabilities. Rather than they're saying, look, NSA, if you found a defect in the Microsoft operating system, rather than keeping it secret to yourself, you should have contacted Microsoft and said, hey, you guys got a leak in your system. You got a hole in your boat. Let's get it fixed. And what the NSA has done is they found a number of defects, but they didn't bother to report them. They didn't bother to fix them. And Microsoft is saying, look, this is wrong. This is negligent. You are exposing. You're supposed to be protecting the nation, and instead, by refusing or failing to report your discoveries of software glitches, by failing to report it to Microsoft, for example, or whoever else is responsible, you've actually exposed people. You've contributed to whatever problems we saw over the weekend and whatever problems we may be seeing at any time, at any moment. Could be coming again. And I think it's an interesting accusation. I think it's probably correct. I understand that the intelligence apparatus is such that when they find things, it's not in the nature of the CIA or NSA to go broadcasting to everybody, we found a glitch, or we find anything. They like this, it's their nature to keep things secret, but they're also responsible for trying to keep this country and other parts of the world safe. If they don't report these flaws in the computer, what are we going to do? How do we defend ourselves? It makes us more vulnerable. So we see a tension building here. We have the intelligence agency, which would like to keep everything shrouded and secret. And yet, if they do, they expose the public to serious problems. And how that's going to unfold remains to be seen. But you can expect there will be a congressional investigation in the near future as to what happened with this ransomware and who's responsible and what are we going to do about it. And is somebody going to tell the CIA and the NSA, if you find these glitches, these defects in fundamental operating systems that are important to everyone, you got to report them. Either that, or at minimum, you've got to secure things where they can't be stolen. All right? Yeah, which is, again, we talk about it on a fairly regular basis. There is no secrecy in the internet age. All right? If you've got anything and you want it kept secret, you better not store it on a computer that's tied up to the internet. And that applies not just to you and me with our little PCs and our laptops. It applies even to the NSA and the CIA. People are essentially walking in the door and helping themselves to computer files, which is just astonishing, but it's evidence of why. It's evidence to my mind, I harp on this on a regular basis, why you don't want to store your wealth in a digital form. If the CIA can't even keep hackers from getting in there, how are you going to keep them out? If NSA can't protect themselves against hackers busting in, how can your bank protect your digital currency? All of this, you know, we saw some people are investing in Bitcoin, and there are people who are predicting that the Bitcoin is going to be worth over $1 million a coin at some point in the future. Well, that might be true. I don't know. I'm skeptical of that claim. But what's going to happen if Bitcoins turn out to be worth $1 million each?
I have
some. Every high school kid in the country will be trying to steal a Bitcoin.
Hey, Al, you can buy a bunch of Iraqi dinars with
that
money.
Yeah, I get that too. But first, that, well, at least, yeah, they have a certain tangible reality. It's paper and ink. While the Bitcoin has no tangible reality. But one of the things you can anticipate, right now they're running I don't know what it is today, $1,500, $1,600 of Bitcoin. People are starting to look at that and say, how can, do we have any programs here to show me how to steal some Bitcoins? And if they go to $1 million a piece, people holding Bitcoins are going to say, yay, I'm rich. I was so smart to invest in Bitcoin, until they find out that some hackers cracked into their computer and figured out a way to steal their Bitcoins. And if they're worth $1 million a piece, if that happens, there's going to be a lot of hackers that are going to be looking to steal Bitcoins.
And I understand the blockchain technology, but...
Oh, it's kind of separate. The cryptocurrency is one thing. The blockchain is another technology.
I mean, I get all that, but I do believe that anything can be hacked. I believe there's someone smart enough out there, and you have governments. Governments hack into computers and everything. It's a big, it's a big deal.
But, I mean, it may be that we're going to have to stock up on quills and parchment, because sooner or later, somebody is going to create some sort of a bug, a virus, ransomware, whatever, that will maybe take down all the computers on the whole world. That's not an impossibility. It's maybe improbable, but it's not impossible. Someone just might find something and say, oh my gosh, if I just, look here, make this little formula, put this together, put this little program, push this button right here, and all of a sudden every computer in the world is going to collapse, or maybe only 70-80%. Not impossible. And then what? We go back to what? Abacus? Is that how we'll do our calculations on an abacus? On a handheld calculator? If our computers all die, what are we going to do? Talk about interesting times. I mean, good Lord.
This morning I saw an interview with Ben Sasse. He's a senator. I think he's out of Nebraska. And he wrote a book about the millennials. And today he mentioned that there's not a lot of difference between a 10-year-old, a 15-year-old, and a 20-year-old. And he relates that to video games. He says, you know, at one point in time, there was a big difference. He says, but kids are spending so much time on these video games. And I was reading articles where millennials don't think they're adults until they're in their 30s, early 30s, 30s.
Oh, I understand that completely, Melody.
He says, you know, people are, you know, they have relationships, you know, they get married, and, you know, there's complaints because, you know, they sit around and play games for 5 or 6 hours a day. You know, it's almost, instead of doing drugs, you're hooked on the millennials. Yeah. But now there's big developers that are rolling out co-living units to millennials. Now, this is one real estate firm that's offering apartment sharing option in Chicago if all you want is a room. You know, and I said a couple, you know, these big malls and so forth, they ought to turn them into apartments, you know. You could change them around. I don't think this is what they're doing, but it's the same idea, that there's several startup companies, WeWork companies, have launched apartment sharing businesses that rent out individual rooms rather than entire apartments. And we're not talking about a complex of, you know, 6 apartments or 6 rooms. These are huge. And there's a lot of traditional real estate owners that are trying to get in on the act. Property Markets Group, a 25-year-old developer, already has started offering a co-living option in one of its Chicago buildings. Firm executives say they plan to expand the offer to more than 7,000 beds in 3,500 apartments in the next few years as they develop buildings designed for co-living. The arrangement typically are geared towards the millennials. Individual rooms are smaller than those in standard 1- and 2-bedroom apartments, but each of these units will typically have its own bathroom. Everyone is trying to wrap their arms around a new living concept for these millennials. property markets. They've developed $4 billion worth of more conventional rental buildings and condos since 2008. But their rent's still going to be $1,000 a month. Why would you pay $1,000 a month for a room and a bathroom when you can live at home with your parents and not pay anything at all? There's only one thing I can, is if you want to have a personal relationship with someone, and it's difficult to do it at home. So it's just like, but again, we look at, there's not affordable housing for people. But I don't consider $1,000 for one room and a bath very affordable for a millennial who doesn't think much different than a 10-year-old.
Yes, but it has 20. An internet connection, Melody. You forget
I
that.
I guess.
You know, anyone who's seen The Matrix, now, what, 10 years old maybe since The Matrix came out, the movie The Matrix? The original, there's probably three versions anyway since then, or two more since then, three total. But the Matrix, they had everybody plugged into these computers, plugged into this artificial reality, and living like babies, unborn babies in little wombs. And they didn't have a room the size you're talking about, Melody. They had a room that was the size of a crib. And that's what you had. And you were wired in there, and you had some sort of an illusion, and everybody was... It seemed like a fantastic concept, but what we're seeing are people who are testing it and saying, you know, maybe this will work.
Yeah.
Maybe we can plug these people into the video games and the internet, and they'll go for it. I mean, we could have concentration camps, Melody. All you have to do is promise you go to the concentration camp and you'll get a free internet connection. There'll be people signing up. Say, yeah, I'll go to the concentration camp as long as I got free internet, free video games. Sign me up.
I mean, can you imagine 7,000 beds, 7,000 millennials in a complex?
No. I mean, it's the sort of thing where...
That's creepy.
It is creepy.
Even 3,500. That is creepy.
You know, bunch of black people into some of these...
It's not about race, Al.
I know, but what I'm trying to say is at least the blacks had the good sense to kind of... react adversely to being cooped up in these apartment complexes that were designed for people on welfare. It's not a good place. It's not a good place to be, but at least they had enough brains and courage and whatever to be upset about it. The millennials, they kind of sound like, yeah, you can pack them in, you can pack them away. That's all right. They don't mind. You can put them in a room the size of a bed, plug them into the internet, and they're good to go. Happy campers.
Yeah.
We live in interesting times, Melody. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my